Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure BioSpeed Clean Vacuum Cleaner. Save $200 on this powerful vac that doesn't have a cord and is bag-free. To save an additional $20 with free shipping, put in code word GRACECLEAN at EdenPure.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. It is Tuesday. We're chugging along here. And I was talking a little bit yesterday about this transgender BMX freestyle rider, Chelsea Wolfe, who last year had said if she ever got the chance to be on the Olympic podium, she would burn a U.S. flag. And it kind of took my breath away because I just thought, wow, how much things have changed. And her reasoning for this was that she doesn't feel that, you know, we're inclusive enough or, you know, and then she said, I take a stand against fascism because I care about this country and I'm not going to let it fall into the hands of fascists. I'm not even going to go into the rest of her explanation about why she would say something so horrible. But it really did make me think things have drastically changed, especially when it comes to the Olympics. The Olympics used to be all about unity and patriotism. And, you know, believing that your country is the greatest country in the world. Ours actually happens to be the greatest country in the world. But I immediately thought of Micah Ruzioni. You guys probably know him. He's best known as the captain of the 1980 Winter Olympics United States national team that defeated the Soviet Union. The famous miracle on ice. The movie obviously came out later. I've watched that so many times thanks to having two brothers. But Mike, thank you very much for joining us. And we want to get your take on this, Mike.
Well, first of all, thank you. I was blown away by it. I was like, really? I mean, it's gotten to that point. And I'm not getting into the issues of transgender and anything else. This is the Olympic Games. This is a totally different discussion. And to even fathom standing on the podium representing your country and wanting to burn the American flag, I was like, who thinks of things like this? What would, you know, there's other forums to you know, talk about the issues and problems that you might have, but to even think of that, it was like, oh my God. I've always said the proudest moment that you can have as an athlete, I believe this is when you stand on the podium and you see your flag being risen just a little higher. And if you're in your own country, everybody's singing the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, like they did in 1980, or you personally as an athlete might be singing it. It's an incredible proud feeling. It's not a Super Bowl. It's not the Stanley Cup. Because there's always different teams in different cities. This is the United States. This is so many people that helped support you over the years, family, friends, coaches. The opportunity to put that USA jersey on is a special, special feeling. And to treat it that way I was blown away. And I think people have the right to say what they want, but I think you're crossing the line when you talk about burning an American flag. I mean, first of all, you shouldn't burn an American flag anywhere, let alone on the podium of the Olympic Games.
Right, and I think you bring up such a good point, because it's fine to have problems with the country that you live in, and we're lucky enough where if we voice our opinion on things that we see as issues, we're not going to be beheaded or thrown off buildings or, you know, thrown in jail. But there's a major difference when you go to represent your country. You know, it's not something you're not writing on a Facebook group or putting something in the New York Times. Your job is to represent the United States of America. And I watched you on Fox today, Mike, and something that Brian Kilmeade brought up that I thought was such a good point, I actually got chills. He mentioned that when you were on the podium, you waved the whole team up, and it was a real moment for America. And you explained that the reason you did that was because you guys were representing all of America. You were representing all different parts of the country. Explain to my audience what that meant to all of you.
Well, first of all, I've never felt one person should be on the podium when it's a team accomplishment. And if you follow anything after 1980, when the Olympic gold medals are giving out for ice hockey, it's a long podium with all the team members stand on it together and not just one. So that was the first reaction to me. This wasn't about me. It was about our team and what our team represented. And granted, there were a lot of guys on our team from Minnesota, Massachusetts, Michigan, Wisconsin. But when you put the USA jersey on, you're from the United States. You're not from Michigan, Minnesota, Massachusetts, or Wisconsin. And that was the one great thing about our team. The total respect we had for each other, first of all, and second of all, the respect that we had to be an Olympic athlete. And I think, you know, by having everybody up on the podium, just, you know, kind of reinforced the issue of how close our team was and what we believed in.
And Mike, do you notice as you watch sports, I always feel when people watched games like the ones you were in, that it really drew people together, all races, you know, all ages, all genders, people really felt connected in that moment. But what I've noticed recently is there's this real push to politicize everything and to use everything as a moment to make it about the individual or, you know, specific problems or issues. There doesn't seem to be this desire to kind of bond over athletics the way we used to.
Yeah, well, I just think we're living in a different era. I'm old school. I'm old fashioned. I said the Pledge of Allegiance. I stand up for the flag. I put my hand over my heart when I hear the anthem being played, because I grew up in that era where we understood and respected the history of the flag and what the flag meant. And I'm not saying everybody doesn't do that today, but everybody's got their own ideas. Everybody's got their own opinions. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, I mean, all the stuff everybody's on. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got an answer and a way to solve the problem, and yet we still can't seem to unify everyone together. And, yeah, there's always going to be disagreements. There always has been. That's what makes America the, you know, unique place, is everybody has an opinion and you know, wants to help in whatever way they can. But it seems like now it's gone to the extreme that it's all about me and it's all about I and it's not about we anymore.
I totally agree with you, Mike Ruzioni. I want to ask you one more question. One thing that this person, Chelsea Wolf, said, she said, one of the reasons why I work so hard to represent the United States in international competition is to show the world that this country has morals and values, that it's not all of the bad things we're known for. When you were going into the Olympics in 1980, did you feel like you were trying to dispel misconceptions about all of the, quote, bad things we're known for?
No, we wanted to win a hockey tournament. We wanted to, represent ourselves, our country, the sport of ice hockey the best we could. And the best way to do that would be by winning, and we did. It was a very political time in 1980. The hostages had been taken. The Soviets had been in Afghanistan. We boycotted the Summer Games, if you remember that. So the whole world was, you know, looking at these Olympic Games and wondering what's going to happen. And we never looked at it from a political standpoint. Our victory didn't release the hostages. Our victory didn't pull the Soviets out of Afghanistan. What our victory did was brought joy and pride to a nation at a time when we were looking for something to feel good about. And people were then waving the flag. And like I said, it didn't solve the world's problems, but I think it showed, you know, when you believe in something and you work together as a group, that anything can happen. And I think people saw that in our victory and took great pride in that. And the letters I still get them from people who were around in 1980 still talk about what that moment meant to them as far as the pride in the United States. And that's what the Olympic Games can do and bring. I understand what she's saying about the problems. You know what? You want to solve the problem? Stand on the podium, put your hand over your heart, and sing the national anthem if you win a gold medal. Don't talk about burning the flag.
Absolutely. And Mike, you're also an author of The Making of a Miracle. I want people to check out that book if they get a minute. The captain of the 1980 gold medal winning Winter Olympics U.S. hockey team. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. And what an incredible life that you've had, and so many accomplishments. And we thank you for all of them.
Well, thank you for having me on. And I hope all your listeners are well and safe.
Thank you very much, Mike Ruzioni. It's amazing because he's absolutely right. You know, it's not that, you know, a win is going to cure all the world's problems, but that's not what it's about. It's about the team. It's about making people believe in miracles for even if it's for a second. You know, these, I think that's a part of it, is these athletes don't realize everybody's got a story, you know, everybody's got a struggle. And a lot of people's struggles that don't make millions of dollars a year are probably a lot tougher than some of these athletes. And I'm not saying that they don't have their issues too, but everyone's got burdens and problems and issues. It's okay once in a while to put aside your issues and your problems with this country and make people feel good and make people remember that we live in the greatest country in the world. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Not every single minute needs to be a lecture or a PSA or a virtue signal. You actually wouldn't believe how much good you can do when you don't make it about yourself and you don't make it all about the negative for 1 minute. Crazy things can happen when you look on the bright side. That was so awesome having Mike on. What an incredible guy. We will be back. We have a lot more to talk about. 844-500-4242. Call in, weigh in. What do you think about this? This isn't the first case either. There was a whole upheaval about surfers in Hawaii not wanting to represent the United States. They just wanted to represent Hawaii, which I know you're thinking, Grace, Hawaii's in the United States. I know, but they still had an issue with it. These Olympics, they are completely losing what they used to be all about. 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's the Grace Curley Show.
A tiara when I came in here, because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game.
It's over.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a different time for sure. It was less about burning the American flag on the podium and actually waving up your fellow teammates. But hey, you know, it's just the times are changing. What can I say?
That was a time before the systemic racism.
Yes, before it was everywhere. Before it was absolutely everywhere. Today's poll question is brought to you by CapeLily.com, 100% natural soaps, perfect for sensitive skin, handcrafted in small batches with Cape Cod sea salt. Buy local and save your skin with these moisturizing, chemical-free soaps. Love your soap, love your skin. Go to CapeLily.com, that's Lily with two L's, CapeLily.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Should drinking on the beach be legal?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no.
44% of the audience say no. 56% say yes.
Wow, very close. But it looks like if it were up to Grace Curley Nation, we'd all be boozing it up on the beaches. Tom, you're
How about no?
Tom, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Tom.
I'll drink to that. Hey, I remember where I was when the United States hockey team beat the Soviets in 1980. I was working at TGI Fridays on the corner of Newbury and Exeter Street, and the general manager, his first name was Paul, I won't say his last name, because he was he announced over the microphone early in the afternoon, if not mistaken, that the United States Olympic hockey team had just won the gold medal. The whole place stood up and cheered for about 5 minutes, and Mike Arruzzioni was absolutely right. The mood of the country at that time, with the hostages pulling out, Jimmy Carter pulling us out of the Olympics, the high gas prices, the Mari Alito boat lifts down in Miami, it was just a time of just chaos and uncertainty. And for a while, because of that win, it really put a lot of faith back into ordinary Americans such as myself. And I need to remind you, those guys were college students.
Mm-hmm.
They were amateur athletes. The Soviet Union team, That was their job. They were literally a professional hockey team in a communist country. That was their full-time job. And for those guys to defeat them, that was just unbelievable. And for this spoiled brat to go on the world stage, because if he or she doesn't do it, I'm sure there'll be some social justice warrior does it. And if that happens, that is going to send the rest of the world a serious message of how broken this country is and how divided it is. And what do you think happens with our enemies when they see that kind of stuff? They will pounce on that like a cat on a mouse. And I am fed up with this stuff. And I will never, ever vote for another liberal Democrat so long as I live.
Well said, Tom. I totally agree. And I think it does say a lot about not just the state of the country right now, but the younger generations. I mean, it's all about me, me, me. I. Let me make a signal. Let me make my point. You know, let me get on the cover of Vogue. And in 1980, it wasn't about that. It was about being part of something bigger than yourself. And it was about being proud of your country. And I don't know what it is right now. I think it's a combination of people being spoiled and people being bored. But I don't think people understand how lucky we have it. All flaws and warts included, we are living in the best country in the world. And the difference between someone like Tom or someone like me and this person, Chelsea Wolfe, is that she wrote this a year ago when Trump was president, and then she since deleted it. And I don't think she'd write it now that her guy's in the White House. But here's the major difference. You shouldn't write it anytime. You know, you shouldn't have that thought anytime. I noticed that right after Biden won. You know, I saw certain people sticking their American flags back out, wearing the, you know, patriotic stuff. And it really made me sick that they had hung that up for 4 years, because they weren't happy. So they took their ball and they went home because their guy didn't win. I don't like this administration. I don't like their policies. I don't like how they want to transform America. But I still love this country. I'm still proud of this country. I still stand up when I hear the national anthem. You know, that stuff shouldn't be contingent on whether or not the president has the right letter next to their name. And that kind of stuff drives me absolutely crazy. And it's so classic liberal. When it's my person in the White House, when it's the person I voted for, all is well. You know, gas can be $15 a gallon. What do I care? Everything's just peachy keen. But when it's George Bush, or when it's Donald Trump, or when it's anyone I don't like, Hitler's in the White House. And we can't, you know, wear an American flag. We can't show an American flag. You know, this country, oh, we're an embarrassment on the world stage. No, we're not. This person is embarrassing. Chelsea Wolfe. That's embarrassing. But this country is not embarrassing. Ever. It doesn't matter if it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump or Barack Obama. You have to be proud to be an American. I'm so glad we got to talk to Mike Ruzioni, just an incredible guy. And when we get back, we have other things to hit on here, including some fresh sound that I think you guys are going to enjoy. So don't go anywhere. 844-500-4242. Thank you for the call, Tom. Great caller. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. All right, so this is an interesting piece. Free money can make life worse, by Robert Doerr. The left continues its push to do away with accountability and safety net programs. Democrats in Congress recently made an enormous change to public social programs while no one was paying attention. That's their favorite time to do things. Have you noticed that? Next month, the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, will start sending checks to qualifying families. $300 a month for every child under six and $250 for each older child. These monthly payments will flow regardless of whether the recipient is working, looking for work, or in training or education programs. In addition, recipients will no longer have to enter a welfare office, ask for help, and have government workers encourage them to find a job. This new no-strings-attached cash from Washington, for example, will leave unaddressed the serious problem of substance abuse. By sending checks directly, the Biden administration will sever the contact between parents and social workers, which helps uncover signs of addiction. Not every unmarried, non-working mother who dropped out of high school has a substance abuse problem, but many do. This is a debate we've been seeing now for a long time. The government is here to help you, so they say. And the way they're helping is they're giving people money. And this is a new update. Under current law, when single parents apply for aid, they must help locate and engage non-resident parents for child support. This effort not only leads to significant financial support, it sends a strong signal about parental responsibility, especially for fathers. Not surprisingly, these steps ultimately have positive effects on children. By ensuring that absent parents meet their financial obligations, they cause billions of dollars to flow to single-parent households annually. More important, parents who pay child support become more involved in their children's lives. These days, you know who... So then it goes on to talk about the fundamental problem with the new program is that it will reduce the community connection of millions of families that are at heightened risk of distress. Many of these families need help that money can't buy. The mission of welfare programs isn't merely to raise incomes. It is to help struggling families thrive. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan didn't like the welfare reforms of the 1990s. He worried that the system, which emphasized personal responsibility and encouraged work, would lead to children sleeping on grates. He was wrong. In fact, outcomes improved across nearly every measure of child well-being. Child hunger has dropped, education has improved, and health outcomes have gotten progressively better. Properly measured, child poverty fell almost 8 percentage points in the subsequent decade. These days, you know who sleeps on grates? Adults who receive monthly checks from the federal government but don't have to deal with caseworkers. Almost 80% of the homeless, the people setting up tents in cities all across America, receive government benefits, often in the form of monthly cash aid that comes without any regular connections to caseworkers. Now, this guy, Mr. Doar, he's president of the American Enterprise Institute, and he served as New York City's Commissioner of Social Services. So I'm going to go on a limb and say that Robert Doar qualifies as an expert on this. It is interesting because welfare has changed so completely from what it originally was meant to be. And it's funny because when states like Florida saw all of this extra money being sent to people, they said, This is not incentivizing anyone to go get one of the 9.5 million jobs that are open right now. So we're going to cut that extra 300. And people were so upset. You know, there was all these think pieces about women who couldn't find work. And, you know, yeah, there might be jobs open, but not for me. I'm 50 years old. I can't find a job. And it worked in Florida. You know, more people went back to work when they weren't getting the extra cash. And now what they're saying is they're going to give extra cash for each child. And that seems like a disaster because then you're encouraging people to have children knowing they're going to get extra money. I'm not saying that's what most people will do, but there'll definitely be some cases of that. Brandon, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hi, Grace. Hey, I love the show. Since Rush has passed, I've been listening a lot online in the Mid-Coast region of Maine here, and it's a great show.
Thank you very much, Brandon. I so appreciate that.
To the point, my wife and I are moving from Maine. She has quit her job now because her company's gone woke. Our area in Mid-Coast is beautiful. We moved up about 3 years ago, and we love it here. I mean, love it, and it rips my heart out, but we have to leave now because of everything that's going on in this crazy world. And I just wanted to call that in. It was on my heart. I never usually call on the shows, but it's just great to be able to voice that. And hopefully people in this state wake up. We're going to have to go to a red state. We cannot we just can't live here anymore.
Yeah, and there's good news, Brandon, about that, because I kept saying to Howie, I'm like, I know you love Florida, and I know you love to come back here and brag about how nice Florida is, but you better watch out, because a lot of people are moving to Florida from New York. And I gotta assume they're bringing their voting habits with them. But there was actual studies that they're not. Because when you think about it, and Brandon, you can probably speak to this, when you think about leaving a state that you do love, I mean, every state has its issues, but, and I make fun of Massachusetts all the time, but you love the place you're from, you know, a lot of people do. It takes a long thought process to figure out, am I actually going to move? Am I going to, you know, either change my job, move my kids out of school, sell my property, buy a new house? There's a lot of factors. So when people finally do come to that decision, it makes sense that they've thought about what led them to this point, what caused this state they're in to be unlivable. So I'm hoping that, like you said, people not only wake up, but when they move to other places, they change their voting ways.
I guess that would be my only point, just really quickly, is that I hope Americans, especially more on our side of things, they do start to make sacrifices. And I mean, this is crazy for us, but it's to us now a necessary sacrifice that we have to make. And I think if we don't start doing something, we've lost it, which is just, it's amazing to me. I mean, I'm 45 and I can't believe the way this country's gone. So, but thank you so much for letting me on the air.
Brandon, love, of course, show. Call back anytime, and good luck with your move. I agree. I think people are standing up. The reason I say that is because almost every single day now, there's a new video or, you know, that's going viral of a parent standing up. Yesterday, there was video of a young woman, a young girl at school, and she was standing up against Black Lives Matter posters, and people are really getting brave. I think people are starting to realize, Americans are starting to realize, that we are kind of at this crucial point where it's, you know, the left has been boiling the frog for quite some time. And a lot of times they're great at gaslighting. So if you get upset, you know, and honestly, you know, I'm gonna be real honest right now. I would kind of make fun of, you know, sometimes my, not so much me, but sometimes my siblings and stuff, we'd poke fun at my parents. Like, oh, come on, you're not actually that upset about it. Oh, come on, you know, Dr. Seuss. Oh, come on, they're changing the maple syrup. That doesn't really affect you. Oh, does that really, that gets you so mad? And that's how it happens, you know? Everything starts being changed. Everything starts being racist. Everything starts being not woke enough, you know? And slowly but surely, because people get afraid to speak up, there's only one side of things. Because people get ridiculed, or people get told they're overreacting, or people get gaslit, they stop speaking up. They don't want to get in trouble with their boss, or they don't want to, you know, cause an uproar with their cousin on Facebook. And so people don't say anything. They shut up and mind their own business. And all of a sudden you blink and your kids are being taught that they're oppressors. And they need to apologize for their inherent guilt due to their whiteness. That's where we're at now. And it feels like just yesterday, we were arguing about, I don't even know, things that were so, seemed so insignificant or seemed so silly to be upset about. And then you turn around and it's bled into every single part of our culture. It's just something I've noticed. The left works very slowly. You know, don't let them fool you that they're very good at the long game. Billy, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Billy.
Hello, Grace. So thanks for having me on. One of the reasons that I'm thinking of moving, and I've been saying it for a long time, is the quality of life. You know, I make a lot of money, right? So let's say, right? But I pay through the nose.
Yeah.
I pay so much taxes. I just had to write another check. For what reason? And the thing that aggravated me the most the other day, I found somebody that has six kids and he gets everything for free.
Right, right. It's like when my mom, okay, so Billy, my mom used to go to the grocery store and she would bring all her coupons and she would bring all the sales, you know, notices, and she'd go through and she'd, and I remember, you know, you always try to sneak things in. Oh, Dunkaroos, let's try to get that in the cart, you know. But I would walk through with my mom, And then there'd be people with huge carts, you know, just the EBT card. And I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush, but you do start to lose hope when you're trying and you're following the rules and you're, you know, breaking your back, trying to save a little bit of money. And then other people aren't. And the left just thinks everything's for free, pie in the sky, no big deal. It gets annoying.
I just want to say one more thing. And the thing that aggravates me the most, the really most, is this government. When it wants more money, it raises our taxes. How about cutting the budget?
Right.
How about a waste of our money? I had a cutback this year, so millions of other Americans had a cutback, but not Uncle Sam, though.
Yeah, no, Billy, perfect point. There's actually a great piece today in the Wall Street Journal. It's called The Biden Budget's Arithmetic Problem. And it says President Biden's first full budget released last month, by the way, it was released on a Friday, I believe, a nice Friday dump, forecasts a large increase in social spending paid for both by heavy increases in taxes and by big deficits and new public debt. The budget, which outlines major new spending initiatives in the American Rescue Plan, or as Biden likes to call it, the American Rescue Pan, American Jobs Pan, and America's Family Pan, represents nothing short of a transformation of government's role in the economy. Many economists, including Lawrence Summers, have highlighted the risk of the budget's fiscal properties, namely inflation. But going deeper, the budget creates structural fiscal risks by crowding out future spending on things unrelated to the Biden administration's social agenda. This is a really good piece. And at the end of it, he says, the much larger problem is arithmetic. Such tax increases can't come close to funding the additional social spending the president's budget proposes. Closing the gap would require general tax increase. President Biden's budget is bold, indeed transformative. It is also risky and ill-conceived. As currently constructed, it isn't up to the task of increasing economic participation. It neither recognizes nor is constrained by fiscal reality. Progressives can pivot to accomplish the president's goals, but only by daring to ask American taxpayers, all taxpayers, to pay the costs. It's absolutely true. Somebody's got to pay the tab at the end of the night. And eventually the people picking up the tab get sick of it and they start going to a different bar. 844-500-4242. We will be right back with Howard Lawrence Carr. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Michael Ruzioni! Through Massachusetts.
Who do you play for?
Play for the United States of America.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Very exciting to talk to Mike Ruzioni. I mean, it's just everything is so different now, Howie, with athletes and the Olympics. I keep reading one woke story after another. One about the surfers in Hawaii. They said, we want to represent Hawaii. We don't want to represent the United States of America.
Well, remember when Barack Obama said it was good to be back in Asia when he landed in Hawaii? Asia.
Well, when I was reading the
story.
So
are they going to represent Asia? Is that, that's a big country.
I was reading the story. I'm thinking, It doesn't even make any sense. But then you read about this other person who wants to burn the American flag on the podium. And you notice how whenever they say that, they kind of jinx themselves and they don't end up making it to the podium at all. That's something else. That's like the Lindsey Vonn thing.
The guy's not even on the team. He's like on the Olympic equivalent of the taxi squad, you know?
Right.
He's on the practice squad.
Now he's got his name in the news.
He couldn't make the top 57 on the team. So, he's, you know, they signed him to a, he's a free agent.
Now, Howie, you have a great column coming out. You've been working on it all day. You've been requesting ideas. I'm sure you might go to the text line later for some inspiration. But I want to play this cut for you, and maybe you can work in what you're writing right now to this. This is Chuck Schumer, cut 10.
And Donald Trump lied over and over and over again, poisoning our democracy, lighting a fire beneath Republican state legislatures, who immediately launched the most sweeping voter suppression effort in at least 80 years. Just a note, how despicable a man is Donald Trump. He lost an election legitimately. He can't face that it was his failure.
How despicable of a man is Donald Trump? Coming from the guy who said the R word like 5 days ago.
I mentioned that. I said, you know, imagine Donald Trump saying any of these things. You know, calling George Floyd George Kirby, wearing a Klan garb, going out in blackface, hiring an ex-con to be his drug dealer after throwing around the N-word. And
being part of an all-white beach club.
Right, and then saying in 2006, well, I'm leaving the beach club, and then turning the membership over to his wife. I mean, that's what he did. That's what he did. And Grace, don't mention that one of the directors went to Deerfield Academy. That's not kosher.
That's the least of Deerfield's problems.
It is. It absolutely is. His name is Prince, too. Prince.
No, but you can every single day, say, you know, play that game of imagine if this were not just Donald Trump, but if this were Donald Trump Jr. or if this were Ivanka Trump,
right,
or Eric Trump.
What about the stuff that I mean, I'll play it. I'm going to play it on my show. But Joy Behar, horrible thing she said about, you know, when this guy came out from the Las Vegas Raiders, the football team.
OK, wait. So I saw this on the cut sheet, but I was afraid to play it.
Don't
because
play it.
It's gross.
I don't know. Well,
or do
I don't
you just
know
want to save it for your show?
I'll save it for my show. But it's just, I mean, it's
tease.
So
clear.
So she says this horrible thing, and then she just says, scratch it. Oh, scratch it.
Oh, I'm sorry. You
know? Yeah.
Forget that.
Yeah, just that, you know, I want to get a pass like Joy Reid about the way Muslims act, and, you know, the time-traveling hackers put all those homophobic things in my on my Twitter feed, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, how do they get away with it? It's amazing.
And then people turn around and they say, well, you say you don't like cancel culture. Here's the difference. I think people can say whatever they want. And then if they apologize, if they change their ways, that's great. But liberals would not give us that kind of leeway.
Pass.
They would not be that kind to us. Just remember that. All right, guys, Howie's coming up next with that Joy Behar cut that you definitely want to hear. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.